American Utopia is a show which toured many cities of the world before becoming a sellout Broadway hit. It's the creation of the incredible, ever-evolving, ever-creative David Byrne, and features many of his best-loved songs performed by 12 musicians, singers, and dancers live on stage using no pre-recorded tracks. His wish was to represent hope and possibility on stage, and this he does in the most abundant of ways. This podcast was recorded 6 months after the Broadway run finished and explores how life has evolved since the show ended. It was hard to coordinate everyone to be in the same place at the same time, but we did manage to have Jacqueline, Bobby, Mauro, Danny, Tim, Stefan in the same room, and Tendai joined us by the magic of Zoom. I started by asking them how the show was put together.
So we did 1 month of rehearsals of like 10-hour days, 6 days a week. Yes. The first week was all music, and the next three were like choreography. Was all we were like focusing on the next 3 weeks.
Well, there is also a lot of tech because, you know, that's something this show, I think, because visually it's like, oh my God, it's so simple. There is nothing on the stage and they're like carrying their instruments.
Yes, the empty stage. Yeah.
But like underneath the suits and like hidden inside of the instruments, there is a lot of like technology, like the radio transmitters, you know, like the microphone. We had like on the suits, we had like these tracking devices for the lighting.
Oh, okay.
So each one of us had like two.
Right.
And so there was a big, big technological aspect that was really well hidden behind our like gray suits.
Okay.
And that was part of also of like the rehearsals. I remember on the beginning of the second week, I think we spent like 3 days like dialing in the in-ears monitors.
3 days. Yes.
Yeah. You know, going over every instrument and every song in a very thorough way. And yeah, and then we resumed the, after we had that, we resumed the learn three choreographies a day and, you know, like, and that kind of thing.
You're all there and you're all on the stage and you're ready to do this thing. Once you were in the groove, I guess it became just very, very natural and a really lovely thing. How much did you worry about something technical failing? Like, really? You know, if there's so much going on absolutely everywhere, was it a worry? Or could you just kind of just, could you go on, could you carry on no matter what?
Oh, yeah. Our drum tech was really phenomenal, Jeremy Yaddo. And he really, I think, and I'll speak, you know, on the drummer's side of things, and we just felt a great deal of confidence because he was taking care of things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, so the, in that aspect, it was always like, you knew he's solid, he was going to be there for you if something happened, you know, he would take care of it. So that part was wonderful.
I'm just remembering Tendai. On one song, I'm standing next to Tendai on Once in a Lifetime, and all of a sudden she's like, oh no, she runs off stage. Because we would have costume ripping.
Issues, yeah.
Oh yeah, the drum does
I
open
think her
up.
Pants are fresh. Like, where'd she go?
Yeah, I had one of those too.
Well, they weren't quite.
Yeah, that was our technical side.
they were.
Our technical side was more so costume ripping and spatial proximity to not get hit and not hit someone else and always be prepared to catch David in whatever, whether it's vocally, physically. That was our technical side.
Actually, that's true, because you guys are going forward and backward and to the side, and you might be just kind of, you just have to predict. It's like being a really good driver.
Yeah,
you have to predict what the next move
is. Your best friend.
Yeah.
We had remarkably few collisions, considering.
Surprising.
Amazing. Like some guardian angel of no collisions.
Yeah.
Hundreds of shows.
And it even, especially like when we did the film, which was even more so because there were like steady cams on the stage. There were like little lights, like, you know, behind the chain, there were like three lights in the back, or three cameras in the back, and like extra stuff going on. And we still, like, we did pretty good. You know, no collision.
But when you did collide, was it just okay?
There was nothing like dramatic or like not a real, like nobody got hurt or something. But it was something it was kind of, you always had to be conscious of the presence of people around you.
Yes.
And after a while, it becomes very intuitive, I guess. But the technical problems, they always happen. The thing is, we needed to prepare much more than usual. Like if I'm playing like drums on a gig, I know what I need to be careful with.
Sure.
For me to have the less problem possible.
Yeah.
During the show. For this, we had to take care of like many, like the suit, the mic, the in-ear. Like I remember Timmy had like a tape all over his body to make sure nothing will, you know.
Why you?
I think I had so many instrument changes.
Yes, you did.
That all of my wires were always getting pushed around all over the place, and if I wasn't like totally taped up, everything would be like falling and moving. Mostly like the ears falling out of my ears.
Okay, and that's mic, horrible mic feeling.
Moving.
Yeah.
I was going to say though, the technical things, I don't know if people remember, but early on I feel like there's a lot of technical things, because especially with the drums, everything was sort of built and modified so we could wear everything.
Yes.
Because none of those instruments were built to actually go in the harnesses that we were wearing.
No.
So at the beginning in the rehearsal process, like there was an area of the rehearsal room that was like set up to like build like the instruments and all the different attachments and things like that. And Mark Edwards, who was the production manager, was also very skilled in these things. So he was helping build everything.
Yes.
But it was a lot of trial and error. And for the beginning of the tour, I mean, I had a lot of things that were breaking all the time. And then, and at least by the end, once we got to Broadway and the final run, everything was running, like, everything was super smooth by then. But early on, there was more technical things.
But do you think this is the experience in your life where you have had to hold on to a whole lot of different concepts? I mean, is it the most extreme version of that you have ever experienced?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, because it's... Yeah, part of the technical problems is because you're like dancing with your instrument.
Yes.
And which you're not, the instrument isn't necessarily designed to do. So you're like, you know, building a contraption that allows you to do that. And just all the things that could potentially go wrong with that until you like tweak everything properly.
But do you think that because you've had to learn how to multitask so ridiculously, have you taken that into life since the show?
Well, yeah, of course.
But in what ways can you quantify anything that you feel is different about the way you approach multitasking now?
Surprised myself singing while I was cooking. Before I wasn't.
I'm just really sorry.
Oh, but that's a good question.
To try to take a stab at that. If the show is really... Because even some of the technical aspects that you were talking about for the beginning, the tour run, it's to, like, make the most out of having the least things.
Yes.
There. So that's on a personal level of, like, yes, you normally are just percussion, but now it's like, no, you're going to dance and you're singing as well, too. Let's maximize that. And then even there was changes made on Broadway that we maxed out every possible input that we could do on tour.
Yes.
The guitar selections were, like, cut down because it was like, no, we just don't have input for that. People didn't have microphones. Not that. So then Broadway opened it up in a way of that. But I've definitely left now with just like this person, this moment, whatever. Let's just take a song, for instance. And it's like, that's going on here. And I guess it's twofold, because also with David, the thing I've learned the most is that he's like direct to the point. As obscure as I think a lot of his art is, he like says what he means to say in a very clear manner. And so there's many songs that I'll be working on now where I'm just like, do we need all the fluff and stuff? No. And then there's other times too where it's like, are we making the most of like this color that we are using here too? So I for me, it's like a twofold
it is, isn't type it? Thing. Mm. But I wonder, how equal did you feel in the team?
I felt like it was a... There was a lot of... importance of not thinking about it in that way or something to mm-hmm. be like, this is the role here, like on certain songs especially, like we need to hold down this groove and like make it feel really good.
Yes.
And if that's not happening, then whatever, you know, like, so I felt that was the challenge of doing it so many times too, like to keep it feeling good, to get better at playing the pocket, to hook up with the other drummers even more as the thing goes on. just to like, not even to add any notes or anything like that, but just to like, it can be better, the same thing that you're playing can get better and better and more refined and more, so that like when you're playing, when we're playing a groove, I can just, he does a little different thing and we look at each other right away, like, oh, you know?
Yeah.
But it could be just like, no one would notice it.
Okay.
So it's less about how equal, I mean, that's the role, you know? There might be a moment where you're supposed to be silly, you know, or you're in the front of the stage and, okay, go be silly or you know, do something.
Next time.
Next time, obviously, yeah.
But, you know, there's a, for me, there was a lot of like, not, just more like, what's the job? How to make this whole thing better, you know?
I get it. So that's from your point of view. But I wonder about the kind of the bringing the ego in and just thinking, oh, I want to put a few more notes in there. I'm going to put a few more notes in there. And I got this groove, but I'm going to decorate it a bit right now. I really want to know.
I think there was a moment on the tour that was pretty, I thought it was like a lesson I learned. David, we had another drummer percussionist, David, who was part of the tour. And he was playing timbal, this Bahian drum, on toe jam. And at some point, I think he was like feeling really, he started like, you know, like expressing himself a lot.
Yes.
And David, but like he caught that and he turned to Carl, the musical director, and said, Carl, I think one of the drummers wants to express himself on this song. And so we open up 8 bars for him to solo.
Oh, no, that's so nice.
Yeah, and it was like, it's so cool. You know, he didn't like cut him down or anything like that. He just like, he wants to express himself. And
that's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But presumably, if David had that flexibility to allow you to be you, then it's just like the folks who say, you know, I work in an office and there's beer in the fridge and there's table tennis over there and we can do whatever we like and we work really hard. So it's a bit like that because maybe you knew that you would be heard. If you really wanted to do something badly enough, he'd let you do it. So maybe you didn't. You know, maybe he was quite unusual in doing that.
Right, yeah. And also the word he used, you know, he wants to express himself.
Yes, that's it's really lovely. Really, yes.
Polite and special. Something.
Yes. It's really respectful, isn't it?
Very, yes.
In a big way.
I think, you know, and that's something I think everybody felt that way on the show, you know, like it doesn't, as Daniel said, it didn't matter the role that you had, even if it's like just playing a cowbell, like the whole thing, it's something so meaningful and important.
Yes.
That it's, I think it was a general feeling.
But everything felt like it was given with intention and everything felt meaningful and important. And that includes the silly stuff, actually. It was meaningful and important. How do you think you did that as a group? Or did that just come from the ethos that David was kind of sharing with you all? Or was it something that you all generated together and made happen because it was the group of people that you were?
I think everyone would have a different answer, probably. Yeah. But for me, like the songs are amazing. His songs, the lyrics and the songs.
Yeah.
And then the idea of us on stage with no shoes, being together, carrying our instruments. I mean, when he first told us about it, it was like, okay, you know, I'm going to trust it's David Byrne. He's, you know, brilliant and visionary, so let's see where this goes, you know? And we all felt that way, I think, even all during the first, well, not all, but I felt, you know, during the first month of rehearsals, like, okay, like, where is this going to go? And then the first show we did, I remember friends and family coming and being like, yo, this is profound. And I think it was a lot of following the vision of David, to me, and Annie B, and also the trust that he put in Mauro and Carl and all of us into like making it happen. Like you never felt like you could say that if you had an idea for it, that it would never be shot down. It was like, huh, that's interesting. Let's try that. Or if it was not really, not a good idea, maybe later, but you know,
which is fine.
Yeah. But But I know everything was important, but it's I feel like I kept learning about what the art was constantly by even some songs, like where you're just kind of sitting and being able to watch him or listen to the lyrics for the 400th time and still be like, damn, that's a great lyric. Like,
it is.
That still hits me every time. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's, you know, and has to be said.
Yeah, and so there was like the lyrics importance too, and then the bigger narration of the show itself. On the tour version, he gave the voting speech. I believe spoke about immigration there too. But then also, the only cover that was ever presented was like in 2018 or whatever that was Janelle Monáe's "How You Talking About?" And there was no more dialogue in the tour other than that. But then when we get to the Broadway version, it is this like loose narrative of a person finding their way from like beginning until end, and how connections and community matters, and he does it in like a not like I'm gonna spoon feed you this sort of way. So it's this thing that like if you were to see it more times, like you pick up on the further like depths of how like the meaning behind it, and it's like community, and you're also watching it, as Daniel said, in the manner that you are, where we just all 12 people barefoot performing music together.
And there is something about being barefoot. You know, there's a vulnerability about it, a shared vulnerability, but also a real sense of being grounded, really connected to the earth in there. But yeah, it must have felt strange initially, especially if you've never done that before.
Play barefoot?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
When we were in Hong Kong, we went.
Yes.
Oh. Oh my God, that's a... Are we allowed to tell like, tourist stories?
Yeah, say it. This is 10 months into touring. Yeah.
Somebody like else tell 10. The story. Can you guys?
Well, we needed a group spa day, basically. So this is the end of our run.
I think
that's a different story.
Oh, you don't want to?
No, we went to dinner. Our friend like in Hong Kong took us to this amazing restaurant.
Yeah.
And then after that, she said, guys, let's have foot massage.
Yeah.
Because it's something traditional in Hong Kong.
Sure.
And then we all end up in this parlor, you know, like, I think it was like 11 of us, and we are just having foot massage. And then they start like, some people said, oh, we can scrape the dead, like, skin.
The calluses off.
It was just
It was so...
That was 10 months of wear and tear.
Man.
No.
Yeah.
It looked like it was snowing in there.
But it also was such a laugh therapy.
Certain
because
feet,
we were like,
just,
let's be clear.
Oh my God.
I remember because I started.
Really?
And then you went like showering the whole thing. Everybody was like, oh, you're disgusting. But then everybody didn't say.
All right, so if you wonder what it's like playing and hanging out with a bunch of men, this is what it's like.
Tendai, were you there? This. Did you experience that?
I was not in that room. We had our own separate massage moment. But I fell asleep during my massage show. It was great. But I appreciate playing barefoot, dancing barefoot at comfort and home. So I felt like I was, you know, doing the usual, just the most uncomfortable thing was doing it in a three-piece suit.
Well, no, absolutely. And it's quite a tailored suit as well, as we've discussed with the seams, but it is quite tailored. Yeah.
It's tailored enough, but they're still like, they've had to give what we had on tour were gussets on the inside of the pants, so it would allow the pants to still keep the shape but allow Chris and I to move and hopefully not rip our pants.
I think that's what we need every day. It's a really good thing. That's a great hoof story. It's a really great hoof story.
It wasn't a good idea though, because
it softened everything.
Chris was like, I'm never doing this. You guys are crazy. And he was right.
Chris
was like, no, I'm keeping my...
Because you earn them. You work hard for them when you do that.
But you get used to how the foot feels.
Yeah, you know, like, you create like a whole skin thing, and it's then like, it protects you. And then the next day, we were like, no protection. You know?
Nothing. It's like an intrinsic... You know, foot shield.
Feeding everything on the floor,
But we had a good laugh.
That was hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, barefoot is different, especially carrying weight and dancing. It was like a new skill.
Yes. Well,
but it makes sense. Like somehow, with the suit, with shoes, we would have looked like office people.
Oh,
and
yes,
with no shoes, true. We look like dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We made it perfect. It was like suit, but not formal. Just human beings.
It's so clever, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And in David's explanation for the non-shoes, it's like really, oh, yeah, he would look weird.
Yeah.
So it's like there is no other explanation but
just... Suits would be formal. I want it to be a little odd, so, yeah, no shoes.
Yeah, something...
But did it feel like you were part of a community when you wore the suits? Because, you know, that's like uniform, and many of us have not worn uniforms since school, and even at school some of us didn't wear uniform. Mm. But there is a particular thing about wearing the same thing as everybody else. Yeah, you're kind of unified by this thing. But how did that feel?
I it's funny because I'm not a suit wearer. I'm, like, not a fan of suits generally.
Yeah.
But it did feel very much like that. And it's funny, when you just mentioned it right now, I thought to myself, like, the unifying factor is huge. Like, I used to play in an all-female mariachi band,
mm-hmm.
and we have uniforms.
All right.
And there's just something, like, there's a few things. It's like, you just, there's a simplicity and confidence about, this is what I'm going to wear.
Yes.
You don't have to think about it. You know everybody else is going to be there. You know, it's like, kind of like, I don't know. Like, I'm not a big sports person, but I feel like, you know, you put your jersey on and you're like, oh, this is my crew and we're going to go and do something.
So did it feel like that?
It felt like that to me. Yeah, for sure. I think there was a unity there.
The whole thing felt like a crew, like a fun gang.
But also, not just a fun gang, presumably a leveling. It's a leavening experience to just to wear that same cloth, which is a great thing.
And then, like, take, because everyone, you know, each have own personalities and egos and whatever, but it's suits and it's gray suits, the most neutral color there is. And then, so then you do get Jacqueline's smiling face and you see the personality of just, like, what they're emitting rather than, like, a clothes statement being the first thing that you just see in a person versus, like, what someone else is wearing.
Mm-hmm. But that's really powerful. There's something really profound about that.
Yeah.
All the judgments we make.
Mm-hmm. Immediately. I mean, to me, it's like fashion is the first thing you tell a person.
Yes.
Always.
Yeah.
So you come here and it's like, oh, this is, I've got to look somewhere else because all the suits are the same.
Yeah. But that is so profound, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's the utopia of the...
Utopia.
For me, I used to look at it as if we were all some sort of expansion of projection of David's essence.
Yes.
We all some representation of David somehow.
That's interesting.
That's how I used to look at it.
I like that.
I like that.
I never heard you say that before. That's a good.
Well, yeah, I was like, yeah. The only difference is he had, because he's the boss, so he had an extra pocket.
On tour.
On the jacket, there was two or three pockets he was supposed to wear. That's the only difference, the rest.
Yes, but do we know whether he used the pockets because he likes pockets? I'm a great fan of pockets. Yes. So did he just want the pockets because he really liked to put secret things in there?
Pockets.
Or was it purely aesthetic?
I want to say pockets like you.
Yeah,
you can. I don't want to say pockets.
Oh, no, I'd like to say it like you, and pockets. I really am not going to attempt it.
Pockets.
Yeah, you'll have to ask the wardrobe guy why he did that.
Yeah.
Or ask David.
But I don't think we're real pockets.
Yeah, they were real pockets.
No, it's just like...
How do you know? Did you...
Well, on tour?
On ours, there was no...
Because he had the three on tour. Yeah, it wasn't... They weren't... You couldn't do anything with it.
That's such a waste.
yes.
But the Broadway ones, they were real. The two that we had.
Really?
Oh, that's
Broadway
that's
for you.
Yeah.
It was, because I put my light in there.
Not ours?
I never opened it.
I never...
You know, when it's new.
Open it tonight. You can see. You'll be like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, we still have those. Yeah.
Do you still have it?
Oh, yeah.
They gave us...
They gave us Broadway run one and the tours.
Except for the last
one. Yeah, we don't have the last one.
They still have our last ones, yeah.
Are you going to say something about that?
Yeah,
what does that mean?
To be continued.
Dun, dun, dun.
But listen, you laugh over here because over here we're saying that it's an expansion and projection of David's essence. That's what you are. And that's so poetic and wonderful, but it's also, it's It's an amazing thing to have stated, because actually, what is David Essence? Okay, David Essence, we can wear it, okay? Mm-hmm. We can think about it, but you were it. So what is David Essence?
Well, I'm not sure it was the purpose. Again, that's the way I was.
I know, but I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's true.
Well, his essence, for example, is very wide, I would say, like, and very welcoming people from all different sort of backgrounds. Mm. So you could see that on stage.
Yes.
The great observer.
Yeah, great observer. Nice. The whole show is about observing human beings as well. I mean, he was talking about, like, that's the most interesting thing you can look at is another human being, more than a bike and organic mangoes.
Yeah.
Asking questions, maybe too, right?
But everybody making movements. So some movements will be like the same as David. Some movement will be different. I don't know to explain his essence. I don't know. I see it as a gold. When I think about him, I not gold like the material, but the color.
Yes.
That's what I see.
That's really interesting. Not the material, but the color in there.
If I think about him, I feel like there's a consistent theme of hopefulness.
Mm.
And so I think that really was something that all of us could absorb on the stage and in the audience. And I think that's why that statement of, like, the show is really about all of you and us, you know, connecting. So, I mean, I see that you see that in the, like, reasons to be cheerful stuff that he does. You can see it in his artwork.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that really resonated with me, and sort of like a hopefulness and joy.
So if you actually came along to the theater and you're having a really, really awful day, really, really bad, was it just enough to just get into the hopefulness and joy of being in that production? Or did you need to kind of, did he encourage you to just kind of get rid of what you were carrying and to say what's on your mind? Because presumably he could sense if there was something that was wrong or something wasn't okay. Did he ever say, you know, what's up? Or did you feel that you wanted to kind of say what was on your mind before you could get going into the process and feel clear-headed? Or was it just the process of doing it that made you clear-headed?
Many options.
I think he would. He's not the kind of person that would come to you and say, "Ooh, what's wrong? I'm feeling bad today."
Mm-hmm.
It would be more like give you space, but at the same time kind of embrace you and try to be positive in a very subtle way. You know, like, really, I feel you. You're probably feeling shitty today, but let's try, you know, something in a subtle way, just probably make you feel better.
Also, he sets by example. Like, there were times we're on tour, especially where we were so tired, and he's just like, "All right, showtime," and he's like just throwing down, like singing his ass off, jumping around. We're like, man, this guy, we just biked, you know, all these miles, and he's like jumping around on stage, no right to complain or deliver a halfway performance. Like, how is he doing, you know? So I feel like he. And I agree with Mara. I was thinking of one time we were on tour and I got a stomach bug. So the band flew ahead. They changed my flight because I couldn't. God, there was no way, you know.
No.
And he sent me a link to a funny 10-minute movie. Like, hey, this is a Werner Herzog.
So nice.
Narrates a movie about a plastic bag.
Right.
Gets lost. He's like, "You might enjoy this." And I was like, that was, you know.
Thinking of you.
Yeah, thinking of you. As you're in your bathroom.
So the plastic bag that got lost.
Yeah.
So was it made into a kind of a personality?
It's really funny, and it's Werner Herzog narrating it.
Oh, so. Well, come on.
Yeah, pretty good.
I think you need to share that with us all, frankly.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
Who is the narrator?
The director, Werner Herzog.
Oh, well, yeah.
German director. The plastic bag is... anyway.
Okay. Yeah, you got to do that. I think you've really, really got to do that.
One thing I liked was, as far as, like, trying to clear your head, I don't know if it was always possible to do, you know, in many ways. I noticed it got easier as the week went on. Like, after the days off, I'd show up to the first show, and just like, you know, a lot of stuff went would go on in days off. So.
Yes.
But one thing that I always liked was the pre-show banter that we had in our years.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something that always kind of got me ready for the show. And it was just everyone's mic was open and we're backstage behind the curtain and everyone can talk and tell jokes and stories. And it was different every night. And
that should have been made a show.
But we didn't see each other. I mean,
yeah, we couldn't see each other. Well, actually,
the band was split in two.
Yeah,
two sides.
Depends on where you were.
Oh, so you couldn't see each other. You could just hear each other.
Yeah, waiting by the chair, your curtains down.
Oh, and of course it is. Yeah. Yes.
Angie's on the other side, me telling jokes.
Bobby's on our side.
Bobby,
David was already on stage, but waiting for the thing to start.
Well, and Angie had for sure the best, like
the best line.
Yeah,
she
would be like, we should make a show of you, like telling these funny jokes.
And I literally miss that. Sometimes I'm walking down the street and I'm like, I wish I had my in-ears now pre-show.
Oh, so you were not together at that moment, because of course you weren't together at that moment. So you didn't have a kind of a physical routine of kind of hey, yep, or anything before you started, because you're all in different places. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had different routines. I mean, the drummers, we always gave a hug before the show.
Okay.
We had a line. Everyone's in your place getting ready. Getting
and everyone was on that side of the stage. Right. The drummers, including drummers Bob as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think Tendai, when in the first Broadway run, we kind of like waved.
Oh, yeah, you came down the stairs.
You're right. Like in that little stair.
You kind of start making little check-in points with everyone.
Yes.
Throughout, like, if you don't see them in the beginning of the show, it's like this song and this chorus, this is when we say hey.
Yeah.
This, in between this song, when I'm going backstage, this is when we say hey.
Yeah.
So I feel like those people checked in.
That's the kind of backstage hey. But one of the most amazing things about seeing the show is seeing how you really connect. Mm. You know how people say, you know, if you're going to have a drink, you know, you need to say cheers, but you need to look somebody in the eye. Yeah. But I mean, there really, really is. And it's not just the moment where, oh, something's different and someone's moved in a different way and that's humorous or it's interesting. There are definite real moments of that connectivity. And it's really moving to see. It's really moving.
I'm always kind of amazed that people can see that from the audience.
Because actually,
do you know what I mean?
But you don't just do it with your eyes. You do it with your body. You know, it's a thing. You're giving so much with that look, every single time.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Made us like keep it alive too for each other.
Yeah.
And also, I think maybe this happened because we had the opportunity, you know, we played between the first tour and the two Broadway stints was like 400 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like, you can really start dialing every detail, like sonically, like the way we play the instruments, you know, like how we connected, how we look at each other.
Yes.
So there is like so much room to always make it better or always make it like deeper. And that's how it felt, you know. It never felt like boring or like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go do my job, you know. It never felt that way. I always felt like something, ooh, let's find something like that we can explore a little bit further and make it better, you know, like.
So you were never just going through the motions. But I think that with anything that is choreographed or anything that is kind of planned in a loose sense, you can very much just look at somebody because you just happen to be opposite me just there, and then I'm going to look at you because you just happen to be there. But that connectivity that happened every single time felt so fresh and it felt so genuine. And I do think that's an extraordinary thing.
And those connectivities are there to be explored, you know, when once you find them, it's like, oh, yeah, this is great. And I'm sure we left some there unexplored.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know I definitely, like, once there were points of songs and things like that where I have zoned out or just gone on like remote controlling going through the motions of the song. But then knowing that that's a moment that, oh, Miss Smoke and Chris lock eyes, Miss Smoke, me and Jacqueline pass each other, that always like helps check in. Mm-hmm. And then seeing how just devoted David fan base is.
Oh,
and there would be so many shows where you would see, like, there was one show where there's this young boy in the front, just, I mean, bawling his tears out, just losing his mind. And I definitely had a moment of like, oh, wow, he's looking up here at us. Like, I'm, oh, this is like, you know, just remembering just how much things are bigger than you, but also you are a part of it. And I feel like that make those moments of check-in of like each show of like, oh, we're making this moment together. You know, repetition, the beauty of it, how it makes room for new experiences, new adventures, where you're doing something over and over, especially with Broadway. Mm. I start to really understand, oh, if you're going to do this every night, every single song the same way, you got to figure out how to make it exciting for yourself.
Yes.
So even when you think of, like, we were talking, asking about movement, things started happening just off of understanding sustainability. Being like, I have this on the same side every night. I have to survive this. And how do I make this exciting for myself as yes. much as it is for the audience? And it's only going to be real if I believe it. And it seemed like those moments for us to check in with each other of like, I don't know, like, oh, are you on? Are you locked in? You know, it was like just the recharges that were really necessary. I mean, I wasn't carrying an instrument except for my body. But even when that felt heavy, having to have those moments of like, kind of how I feel like David instills of like not just doing art for art's sake.
Yes.
But there is meaning, even if you don't feel it in that day, the next day, someone else did. You know? And how much he supports us as artists outside of being in the show, I think continues to feed each person's dedication to the show. Because it's not like you're just showing up to do a gig and then you walk away and your boss doesn't talk to you anymore. Mm. He's, you know, very much so a person. And having to decide, as a dancer, a lot of times, a lot of shows where you're kind of like treated as a background at times. And so you have to assert for yourself. And so having Eddie be there, assert for us, and have such a close connection to David, him value not just the movement, but all of it, I feel like continue to open the freedom of wanting to explore the song differently, of wanting to find a way of expanding the show, but also still keeping the core of his vision. Mm-hmm. And then I think it influenced, I mean, me personally as an artist, on how I could take that approach to my own work.
You talk about value. And I think it is all about value, really. I think you've said so much in there, but I like the fact that you've also said that actually recharges are necessary.
That really struck me too.
Because actually, it's true. I think when we're remembering how it was, we remember the energy and the wonderfulness of everything. But that's really real, saying that you did need those recharging moments. And they can just take a split second, can't they? Yeah. But you also mentioned about the little boy in the front row. And I really want to know how you felt about the audience and the fact that it's not just us and them, but how you were connecting and what that meant in different situations. I mean, I remember being and seeing the show, and we just looked at each other so much during that show, and I just thought, this is amazing, because I know you must give that out every single night, but it felt so real, and it felt that it was really okay to be fully participating as an audience member, to feel that freedom to actually say, yeah, I'm actually a part of the body of this energy. And that was an incredible gift. Mm. But I wonder how you felt about it.
I mean, I loved it. Every time, like, so going back to the thing that she was saying about recharge and the audience is that, like, we would get those recharges with each other, but also with the audience. So, I remember looking out and, like, literally made friends from looking out at the audience and being, like, and just connecting with someone's energy or spirit and being, like, oh, no, they get it.
Yes.
Like, and there's, like, a connection that does not even need to be spoken. And I think it's really parallel to David's work in this particular show, in the sense of, like, you know, he's talking about, you know, and he's talking about when you're, you know, the baby brain, where you're like, oh, should I talk to those people? Or should I go over there? Should I do that? And, like, sometimes you feel like you're just sort of in life in the same way that you were talking Tendai about just, like, going through the motions. Sometimes you just feel like you're kind of going through the motions or, like, lost in outer space. And then you connect with a person. And if that person is your friend on stage who you've gone through things with, and, you know, or if it's a perfect stranger in the audience who you feel like an instant connection with. I think that that's what, like, really causes the show to flourish, because there's all these little charges and sparks of energy happening while we're doing the show that, you know, couldn't happen. And so it kind of goes back to the thing you were saying, is like, if you do come in kind of like, oh, I had a hard day, or I've had a full weekend of like dealing with XYZ, and you come into the show, there are those moments that just like zip, they zap you in a great way. They give you a zing of energy that is also like reciprocal, and the other person can receive it as well.
Yes. That's so beautifully put. What are you going to say?
No, I'm just lost in thinking about the show.
One thing, just thinking on that too, because it is so much like that, the with each other and then the audience, and then just thinking it from the audience, this isn't a show where there's like a spinning stage that happens and this thing flies at you, where there's all these like, whoa. Yeah. It's actually just like that connection there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess probably intensifies that even more so.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Because it's quite raw, isn't it? There's nothing big and flying to hide behind.
This is just it, yeah. People in a room together.
It's just thee and me.
But I will say sometimes it is nice when you kind of have a low day that you remember they're looking at David.
Yes.
<Funny. laughs> So it's like moments when you get a moment to shine, and then if you don't shine that bright that day, you're like, oh, well, they came to see him anyway, so I'll make it up tomorrow.
The thing is, we never know that, though.
Yeah.
And there can be just one person who's just really focused on you, just because of the essence of the movement that you have chosen to give at any one moment. And I think it's very easy on a low day to just think, oh, actually, they're just looking at David. But we never know that. That's the beauty of having that live audience. You don't know who they're looking at or why they feel that they resonate with you. You have absolutely no idea.
I love having friends come to the show and give their kind of rundown. And it's always so different, you know?
Yeah.
Oh. Like, who's the guy who has all the bells? And Tim. Man, he is the star of the whole show. You're like, wow. You're like, or someone, you know, it could be anybody. And it was always like, wow, that's super cool. Like, people are just moved by different things, like you said.
Yeah.
You
know? Maybe that's why we could see some people that returned, like, maybe 10 times.
Yeah. Right?
There was this couple. It was really, we start like,
getting to know them, yeah.
They came back. You know, there they are.
Oh, yeah.
They're sitting front row, always front row. And was like, always.
Okay. Oh, we must say goodbye to Tendai.
Bye, Tendai.
Listen, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to see you.
Bye, Tendai.
Thank you.
Bye,
thank
Tendai.
You. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Bye.
Say hi to Greg.
Bye.
Yeah.
See you all.
Bye.
Bye.
Next show in December.
So I think people had this almost like an urge to come back and see the show again, with like, because, you know, there is so many variables and so many ways of seeing it. And
is that why people come back again and again? Because there are so many variables? I don't know. Even if they don't come back because there are so many variables, maybe they come back because they just need to hear the basic theme of why life is really full of hope, and it can indeed be full of joy. And it's actually a very simple thing. So maybe they go back just to hear the same thing again. And I think, yeah, there are those who go back and just think, I want to dig a little bit deeper this time and see what else I can see.
Right. And the humor. People connected with the humor. They wanted to laugh. Like, we had tons of comedians who would come to the show, like Amy Schumer and Fred Armisen, and like, they would come repeatedly to the show to like hear David, because he's funny.
Yes,
I was thinking about Bobby said how we're, you know, we're not, you know, it's not Harry Potter with the light, but there's so many levels to the show. There's so many art. It's such an architecture of things going on. Even as someone, you know, as being in it, there were so many times where I would like, well, I would have another realization about kind of what's going on here.
Yes.
Like, okay, there's the shapes, and then we're all separate, but we're all together, and then even little lyrical things that would escape me for hundreds of shows. Like, oh, that's why he's saying that we're all from different places. Like, dummy. Like, you know, okay. I missed that. I missed it, you know, for 300 shows.
Yes.
You know, there's many things. I mean, but I do feel like I did have this sensation, I don't know if you guys had it too, of like who I am in the show is only in relation to everybody else, and that we're all having this different experience of the show and of life through how we move through the space. So like I know when I'm here, I see these guys and they're moving, and that's also how I knew where to go. So for example, if someone else didn't do what they usually do, I'd be like, oh, where do I go, you know?
Actually, there was something on this last Broadway run we had, because of the whole COVID protocols, we had these subs or understudies.
Understudies, yeah.
And whenever some of whenever an understudy stepped in, of course, it brought like their own personality, and we would miss like some little details here and there, and those connections that you're talking before, you know. I remember when
Abe
stepped in for Bobby. Me and Bobby had this little time that we spin and we look each other in the eye. We almost like, you know, and then we.
Yeah.
And then I tried to do that with like Abe, and he was like, "What do you want?"
What is this?
And I was like, "Oh no,
this is a bit much."
And it's something so it's not something you say. Oh yeah, at that moment when you play that note, look at me, and you know it's like it's something so.
It has to be natural.
You know, it has to be natural.
Here's the note. Did you have and to talk about that afterwards?
No, I was like, oh, how are you going to explain that? But of course, then we made some other connections.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
That, so it's like, that wasn't
me. That's funny.
I loved, is it Dance Like This, where we're sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
Just waking up and then seeing everybody waking up. There's just these little moments like smashed, you know, imprinted in your brain.
And does this happen?
Oh, and also, also this other one, I just always thought about it on Dick of a Donkey. I'm forgetting the name. Every Day is a Miracle.
Yeah. I like that.
At the end, we're all spinning around. Mm-hmm. And that was like, for me, that was like an ecstatic.
Beautiful.
Like whirling dervishes.
I always thought of it as like the science, you know, when you look at all the germs.
Yeah, but I always felt
moving around.
Felt
moving
about
around,
like science. Yeah. Like we're like electrons bouncing.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Everyone's like, we never touch, but we're like.
That moment was special.
Special moment.
Right? My first show, I remember when he came to that. So I jumped on the tour from one day to the other.
Okay.
I learned the thing on the plane, whatever I could
take.
And then it was in Oxford, England.
Yes.
The first show I did. And when we got to that cycle, so we're already two-thirds into the show. And I'm like, wow, I'm nearly done. Because it was like a marathon for me. And the whole thing, I'm like, what's going on? Like,
yes,
I'm discovering
course.
The whole thing while
for the
on stage.
First time. Yeah.
And then we're doing this cycle, and then it felt like a bunch of kids, and then Tendai is just like a happy sort of angel going in the middle of the set. I was like, I'm in a dream. It's not possible. where am I?
Like, plus you're like jet-lagged and tired.
Also, you didn't sleep for 2 days,
the
I think.
Jet lag, I mean, the night...
you didn't have to be
Mauro called me... For the gig the day before, like I'm, you know, I had like a huge hangover. I had a leg, and I was like, what's going on? Like, I took the plane the afternoon, and then I realized what the show was once at the airport, and I was like, oh shit.
Oh shit.
What did I sign up for?
What is. Why did I say yes? Now there's no other way. I'm going to have to
do it.
When you look at it, it was like, wow, I was ready to go and play drums, make notes.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Chris was like, oh no, he should not be on the stage. Because Chris is the dance captain. And I was like, no, let's put him on the stage, you know, like right away, the first show. Because we had this show in London coming up. And for me, it was like, use these shows that we have as a rehearsal for him. So Stefan should be on the stage the whole time.
Yes.
And I was like, Stefan, you're going to be on the stage the whole time. And he did. And that was pretty amazing, right?
They parked you at some point, a couple of songs, parked you somewhere.
Yeah. There was a couple of songs, it was too much. So I stayed on. You're going to smash into you.
You stay here.
Mm-hmm. I remember, so I didn't know the guys. Then it was fun that night. And I'm completely spaced out. And then I'm dancing with Bobby, front of stage. It's the fourth song or something. And then I'm playing and I'm like, what's going on? And this guy is cool and he's dancing with me, so it's nice. And then he's showing me the like move now, move less, so nice. And then I'm playing the snare and the hi-hat, and then suddenly I feel the snare going down.
Oh, yeah.
And down and down, because I had no idea of all the technical thing you have to prepare. We talked about before.
Did the protocols, protocols about like if something is happens on the stage, you know.
Yeah, and the change for the drummers changing the instruments all the time, that's a difficult part of that show. And so I must have put the snare in a way that it wasn't really, and then I'm looking at the snare going like this, and Bobby's dancing very happy, and I'm like trying to play now, and I'm like, oh, if the snare falls down, I'm back in New York tomorrow. So what? Stay here. Well, how can I sort this out?
Well, go on. What happened?
And then Mauro saved me. He had the off mic and he said, go to the curtain now.
Yeah, I actually, my microphone was open just to Stefan.
Yeah.
So I was like telling him sometimes, you know, okay, I said, Stefan, let's go to the curtain and somebody's going to fix it for you. So he like slowly moved to the side, and you know, and then somebody like kind of fixed the snare drum.
Fortunately, he noticed.
This was going to say, you noticed.
Oh yeah, I was keeping an eagle eye on him,
right?
Yeah. I think that day I was also helping him with the choreography, saying like, okay, now move to the right of the stage. Turn around.
So you're right. No, other way. Yeah. You know, over here. You were like, and come with us over. And then he went the other way.
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, over here. I found it on YouTube.
Of his very first show.
Yeah, it's great. I'd love to see that.
And after that first show, I think there was a friend on the audience, and we asked like this person. There was one person on the stage that had never done before and stepped in. Can you tell who it was? And this person couldn't tell. So he did such a wonderful job. It was like impressive.
So you need to keep it fresh? No. So to keep it fresh, you need to be completely jet lagged, definitely hungover, and not know your moves.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stefan's keys to success.
Yeah, that's the big one.
You have to sleep on stage when you're not supposed to as well. So the sleeping thing, that's now my fifth or sixth gig. I think it was in Berlin or something. And, you know, if you remember, we stayed
like this. We stood on the ground.
And then I'm one of the first one to supposed to go up. Oh, yeah, jet lag.
You had to play the
The jet lag really took me at one point.
Because like I arrived straight. Did somebody do it instead?
Okay. I slept until the second chorus. I think.
No.
Must have been great to look at.
Right?
Yes.
Like everybody wake up except one guy.
You have to find that one on YouTube next.
Somebody comes in really tight.
I like it.
And when I woke up, I was like, where is this? Who are these guys?
Yes.
You totally zoned
completely out.
I did the same thing as you once, where we have to change instruments and go quickly and go back on stage. So we go back on stage, and then Stefan is. It's got no drum.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, I forgot to take the drum. I did it myself, too, once. I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, run off stage.
But then what does happen? Somebody has to fill in.
Well,
surely, what do you do?
You make it work. It was never a disaster.
No, it's never. Those are, like, the funny parts, I think.
They're exciting.
I did that once, you know, we played that song, Everybody's Coming to My Life, and I played.
Yeah, that's interesting.
My life.
Yes, it does apply.
Oh, everybody's going to my life.
It's my life. Yes. Okay.
Manifesting.
All right. Do you want to talk more about that?
Oh, yeah. Everybody comes to my life. No, but I'm supposed to play bongos. So when I go outside, I drop the congas or drop the instrument that the timbales, and I don't pick up the bongos, and I go to my place.
You're like
and up to the moment that I'm like, I'm gonna play the moves. I was like, there is no moves. Gustav looks at me like. So I go outside, pick up the bongos. And...
That happens. That's part of doing the same thing every day. So many movements you just do and redo. Yes. And then one day you just forget.
Yes.
And it's all fine.
Yes.
David had a moment also once that he, because he had during the Broadway show all these lines, you know, in between songs, storytelling. And one time he skipped one song.
Oh,
and
no.
We are like...
We told the different story.
He started telling a different story of like the one song time. I had. And we are like, we didn't know what to do.
Because we're all in like very specific spots backstage for each song. Right. So like we might be on the stage left or stage right.
Exactly.
So, different instruments.
This is really interesting. Yeah. So actually, what did you do?
I think at some point Carl came in. Carl had his... Carl also... his voice was never on the audience, but we could hear him talk. Because he did the counting of the song.
Yeah.
So he's like, David, I think we're skipping one song. He was really polite, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And then David was like, oops.
On stage.
Yeah, it's like, I think I'm telling the wrong story here.
Oh, that's you know? So endearing and lovely and becomes its own moment, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we kept us on our toes. We were like, do we do the next song? I think everybody went like,
how do I get
to my next instrument?
Yeah, exactly. Because you guys were on the wrong side of the stage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But was Carl the only person who could have said something at that moment?
I think so. Yeah. Or maybe...
Or text.
One of the...
Stage manager.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're just waiting and hoping.
Yeah, we were just waiting and then Carl took the initiative.
That was awesome.
Oh, that's a beautiful moment.
Yeah, actually, my friend Steven Burstein, once he came, he's this incredible trumpet player, and he came to the show, and he loved. He was like, for some reason, family reason, the show really hit him like in one incredible spot. It's kind of a sad story, but he came to the show, and was exactly in one day. There was a big vocal mistake on the beginning of like Road to Nowhere, that, you know, the choir part of the beginning was like, oh my God, it was like, I think it was the only time that was a big mess.
Oh.
And after the show, I saw him, I was like, man, I'm so sorry that, you know, you saw the show that there was that problem. And he was like, man, I love those moments. I live for those moments. Mm. You know, like the mistakes are the most sincere. And he said in such a nice way, I was like, really? It's like, oh, absolutely. Those are like real, you know? It's like real people, you know? So it's like, those moments are very special. And I was like, wow, it's an amazing way of like seeing... You can see as failure, you know, but that's the moment that it tells that we are human beings.
In doses, I'd say.
Huh?
In small doses.
Too many of those moments in a single performance, Anna.
Well, it's true, you know, but it's like...
No, it can't be beautiful, for sure. It's not perfect. We could run everything through autotune.
Do what?
We could run everything through autotune if we wanted to do
that. Yeah, you could.
Exactly. You know,
but it's
but
like,
that,
it is those imperfections. David's voice... is like the perfect example
yes,
of that.
Absolutely.
Where it's like there's so much vulnerability in it that it's about the expression more than like this pitch and you know.
Yeah, but I think he saw it, you know, and David saw it too, you know, it's like a mistake, it happens and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, of course we're gonna work and fix it.
Mm.
But it happened. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna like I don't know, it's something so it's acceptable.
Yeah, I mean similar to Collision. Do something like 500 times,
right.
And then, you know, not all the baskets are going to get made.
No, that's really true.
Yeah. It was a lesson for me, you know, it's because I respect Steven a lot.
Yeah, to call it mistake, it's a point of view, actually.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
When I first got to Brazil, I got invited to play on this important record, Caetano Veloso, with a great producer, Cassim, Riffy, and then I'm recording, and then... And then at one point I fucked up, like I did something on the bass drum. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to redo this and everything. So I go up and then we listen. And then when he goes to that moment, I have to redo this. I made a mistake there. And then the guy turns and he says, it's the best moment.
Oh.
He said, there's no mistake in music. What are you talking about? And I was like, wow, that's different.
Caetano said that?
The producer. I was like, no mistake in music. That's great. Like, that was a great opening for me. Mm. Like, if you're just scared of missing and doing mistake all the time, then you never really... yourself.
You never dare.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that you make a faux pas, and as you say, it's somebody else's magic, and they're experiencing that. And I think if you really understand that yourself, then that's great. But also, if you're really living in the moment, then you can let it go. And yeah, I agree, you don't want to be experiencing that all the time, because it can unnerve the very core of you. I understand that. But I think it's about letting it go as well. Whatever it is, whatever it has been, it's been part of this music just right now. And now this is what's happening right in this moment. But mm-hmm. it's difficult, isn't it, if you're just still thinking about what may have happened mm. or how other people are perceiving it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You'll mess up again.
Just accept
yeah,
it.
Right. That's right.
A lot of jazz musicians actually will repeat the same mistake to make it.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. To make it like,
it's a choice.
Yes.
That's a classic.
Yeah, yes. That's definitely the great... The bebop players who could really improvising and not just playing licks were always saying, like, no, you go, I'm making the mistake, and then I'm trying to resolve my mistake. So I'm trying to get myself in trouble when improvising. I mean, this is different. We're not really improvising, but those improvisers are like, I'm trying to get in trouble and then force myself to find a way out of it. So then so it makes it into something new, but...
But it's not about really getting out of it. It's about finding a resolution.
Yeah, I don't mean...
And I mean, I think there's something quite deep about what you've just said. That's why I just think that's just like life, really. You know, it's just, you know, it's not just trying to, I've got to get out of this. It's, you know, there will be a resolution. I'm here now, but there's going to be a way. There's going to be a way. Don't really know what it is. Yeah, those bebop guys, it's a challenge, isn't it? Forcing out of the comfort zone.
And also, I remember in the show, if I made a mistake, if I thought about it and felt bad about it, it's just going to take me out of
the present.
Yeah. Take me out of the present And you know, when you're feeling good, you're transmitting that good feeling too. I mean, there's enough of us feeling good that if somebody's off or whatever, that it's not gonna, the thing is still gonna go. But you know, however you feel, you can convey that emotion in groove or sound. You know, when you're feeling good, it's like it's contagious.
But that's...
I was gonna say, I just kept thinking about this moment in the show. There were these moments that I feel like. Were like architecture as well, of like made, they always felt good. That's amazing to me. Like Once in a Lifetime, when it goes to the end of the song, it's just built to like, it's amazing. It just always felt like ecstatic.
Oh yeah.
I think it was the way Jacqueline was playing those cymbals and dancing, you know, it's like... I was always next to her, and I was carrying this big drum, and I couldn't do that, so I was super straight. I want to do that. I want to experience that.
Everybody wants to do that,
but you make up for it in Road to Nowhere.
Oh right, yeah,
right?
Okay.
And all I have the big drum.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Good balance. No, working out.
Leaps.
Really good.
Last month.
Yeah, those last months.
So if this experience was so intense and, I guess, must have touched every fiber of your beings, so how did you grieve it? Because I remember when I met you guys and we actually had a hang, I don't know, I felt it had been such an experience to see this, but it was very near the end.
Yeah.
And I was feeling a bit of the grief, just thinking, well, not that many people can come see this. And I really want everybody to come and see this, and I want to come and see this again. And so we did talk a little bit about grief when we did our hang. But this is 6 months on, and I want to know really how you've dealt with grief of it.
Well, it's been more than 6 months. The whole, for different people, but the whole thing, it was like kind of 4 years or something.
Six months since we ended.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's like everything, right? You have like a moment with something, and then suddenly something is not there anymore. So, it was a very intense think professionally, humanly, society, like, and also like schedule wise, difficult to do anything else, like still did, but suddenly you have your all your nights are free.
Yes.
That's a big difference. And suddenly you don't see the friends every day. But then other doors start to open and then you start doing something else. Well, for me, what has been great is to kind of be able to sit and look at it like we're doing now with the distance.
Yes.
And I could see where it changed me and what I learned from it and what I'm doing better now.
But what do you think you are doing better now?
What am I doing better now? That's a good question. I think I'm playing better. My instrument, I'm singing better while I'm playing as well. That's musical things, but we've done it so much. I used to do it before. I've noticed again independence. Now I dance like a motherfucker. But maybe, yes, I'm less shy with my body, maybe. In a situation of dancing or even like being with other people in a party and not saying anything, I could feel that maybe I'm less shy now.
Yeah.
With how I interact, just physically.
Yes. That's a really big thing.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. And also, like, personally, I learned a lot just to observe everybody working. Like, not only my partner, musician, actor, singer, dancers, but also, like, the technical guys, the stage manager, and David himself. I mean, he was, like, kind of not only creating the show, but making it happen, like, even production-wise. And that was, since the tour for me, was, like, the masterclass. Like, every day, it's, like, to see and to work with him and understand what he's looking for. And such a brilliant mind and how he works on everyday basis, how he maintains himself well during a tour.
Yes.
Those were new things for me. Like, so I really took this as a everyday masterclass with, like, 20 great teachers.
I love it. You say you learnt from David about how he maintains himself on tour.
Yeah.
Because that's such a big thing. This is such a really big issue. So how did he look after himself?
Well, from what I could observe, it's... first of all, he's done it more than all of us. And yes. we all done it a lot. But still, it's like a different generation. But this biking thing, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Like biking 15 miles every day when you're on tour, I would have never even think about this.
No.
And that keeps you in shape.
Yes.
And it keeps your mind great. And you actually discover the cities where you go to. As opposed to go from an hotel room to a dressing room or the bus. That's what you do usually. Doing everything with a bike like that for me was like fabulous. That changed my life too. And at the end of the tour, I wasn't as tired as I thought I would be. And also, I could observe him having his little routine, like in the morning, the breakfast computer. Like, I'm on tour, but my life is the same. For me, it was new, this. Because on tour, yeah, I would follow up my things and everything. But not like... you have to. He's been, like, on tours that take months. For many years.
Yes.
So you, at one point, you just find the rhythm. And I think for myself, I never kind of find that rhythm. And I could observe from him a certain discipline and, not in a heavy way, but like in a loving way towards himself, the way he lives with himself, how he takes care of himself. For me, it was great to observe on everybody else as well. But again, he was the most experienced. And I was like, how this guy is, like, it's kind of way older than me, and I'm definitely more tired than him.
Yes.
How is that? This happening?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was like, that's not, I'm doing something wrong, or maybe I'm not doing what I need to be doing.
Mm. What you mean, like, turning up jet lagged and hungover?
Yeah. No, it was like a learning process on many levels, and since it's finished and I've been grieving, I've also been like kind of finally having the moment of organizing all this new how do you call this? This new ensinamentos, okay.
Learnings.
Learnings, yes. And now I'm at the point where I'm putting it in practice.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully put. Come on then, Tim. I want to know whether you feel that you've gone through any grief having stopped this show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like the grief for me was probably before it ended, like knowing that it was going
to
end.
Yeah, because you know it's horrible. You know it's going to come to an end. Absolutely.
I'd say once it ends, then it's like it's easier to move on because then all of a sudden you have all this time.
Yes.
But it was probably like kind of the waiting while you're doing the show, knowing that there's only like, you know, so many weeks left, so many shows left, and as each, you know, it gets less and less every day. So, and knowing that, yeah, we've spent all this time together, we see each other every day, and then all of a sudden that, you know, that's not going to happen.
Mm.
That same level. Yeah, so for me it was more like the process of it ending as opposed to like after it ended, I would say.
What's life been like since, for you, have you played all those instruments at once since that time. You know, what have you been doing, honestly?
Just a lot of different things. Nothing, like, really focused. Like, not, like, focused on a particular project.
Yeah.
But just, you know, doing just, like, different things, different recordings, different gigs. I've been working on a music video with my daughter.
So I had
to learn how to, like... Yeah, I'm just making it with my iPhone. But, like, just learning how to film with that and do lighting and then video editing.
Yeah.
And I feel like one thing that I really took away from working with David is how he's just so like future and forward thinking.
Next project
and just checking out whatever's new that's happening. Like Stefan was talking about the bike rides. Like the bike rides always had a destination to like check something out, something unique that was going on in whatever city we were. Even if it was just checking out, you know, nature or some kind of like monument kind of thing that's there, or an art exhibit that's happening, or something, yeah, some unique place wherever we are. It was always about doing something new, and I found that very inspiring, so that's one thing I'm trying to like take with me. I don't know if I'm always fulfilling that, but yeah.
But it's interesting that, you know, to do something new can just be the tiniest shift in just, you know, how you're looking at something or the angle that you're looking at it or just the smallest of things. And if you can acknowledge that that is something new, then it makes you feel amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think to be on tour and to be cycling out and finding places and actually living the city, I think that's extraordinary. But I think for most of us, that seems just too big a thing to do each day. But yeah, I think you can get that newness just in really tiny ways in there. And look at you becoming the videographer. That's a really good thing.
I'm terrible.
I'm sure Tim is going to be like a science rocket of video.
Doing it with 10 phones at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely at the same time. Swapping over cameras just whenever he needs to, and it's going to be fine. It's going to be completely intuitive and it's going to work.
Yeah. Harness full of tape.
Tape. All the phones taped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always pulls through the other end. Come on then, grief.
Wow, my grief. I kind of like have the same sentiment as Tim, that it was before the closing was like a couple of really intense, especially when the producers announced that the show was closed.
Yes.
It was closing. I think that's the moment that I was like, oh, this is so sad. This is kind of like, maybe it's my personality, but I tend to get busy. Like as soon as something finishes, I try to move on as quick. So I went on a tour like a week later. I was in Italy rehearsing with another band and like had this. So my mind was right away, you know, something. I moved on like really quick.
But do you think you do that because you need to do that? You know, maybe it's a lifetime habit, but.
Yeah, maybe. I think my wife says that. Why do you do that?
You know, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need to come off, but we just need to just kind of busy in there. And maybe that's because it's quite hard.
Yeah. It's something... Also, because it was Italy, you know.
Oh, okay.
If it was...
How do you refuse Italy?
It's like so... It's like... And I'm like, oh, maybe you should go.
Tough decision.
Not go to Italy? That's crazy.
That's, you know, they have pretty good pasta.
They do.
But yeah, when they announced it, it was sad. And the show kept on going better. Mm. We were like, by the end, we were killing it. And every night finding new things.
Yeah.
That was like, that felt a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
But we did go on tour, and like, that's all we knew about, that it's going to be this tour. And that was the experience. Like, so I remember kind of mourning the end of the tour, like, wow, this is such a profound life experience. And now this is it, you know? And then David had mentioned at some point, like, well, maybe we'll go to Broadway.
Mm.
So there was like an idea of more life, but wasn't really nothing to hang your hat on. And then it happened. We did it again. And then that was going to end. So it was also the chance to say goodbye to it that time. And it was like, yeah, are we really going to come back? I mean, they say we are, but so we kind of went through the, I mean, I feel like I went through the process of saying goodbye to it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The last time that was, okay.
The last time was different because there was no sound of, there were no smells of resurrection, you know, there was nothing at all. So this had a kind of certainty to it.
Yeah, it's true.
So I don't know. It doesn't matter how many times you go through grief. When it happens again, it's still just as bad, I think, really. You know, you cared so much about it. That's part of grieving, isn't it? Just realizing how much you care.
Yeah, and that makes you realize how much you love something.
That's right.
Or somebody. When you don't have it anymore, you're like, oh, wow. So that means that was great.
Yes.
Which is good.
It is really, really good.
Grief is a good, it's maybe not comfortable, but it's a nice emotion as well.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a bad one.
Full acknowledgement of just how much. We haven't mentioned the L word, and it's important that we have mentioned the L word, as in love.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, truly.
I think something I learned, like, about the grieving is that, like, anytime you get something you want or something that you love or something you've desired, immediately attached to that is the grief.
Yes.
Because you're going to lose it.
Straight away, yes.
Like, you know, you might not feel it right away, but completely attached to that is that it's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Because everything ends. And I feel like this time has been very interesting because it's like, you know, like so many things, like music teaches us so much about life. And this episode has taught me that, like, oh, like how well I live is how well I'm able to grieve and let go of something in love, you know, and just be like, that was beautiful.
Yes.
Let it fly, you know?
Let it fly. That's nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let it fly. So with grief, there is the ability to fly.
Mm.
That's magic, that is. Yeah. What do you feel about the grief of it all then, Bobby?
I mean, I guess to add to that, too, it's like letting it fly, but I also definitely feel like it lives forever, like, in me, too. So whether now and I've been teaching, and there's constant times where I'm picking through different aspects of like what I've been through, and like American Utopia comes up for sure. And there is like, I mean, this one was definitely like it's closing, and it was different than the other times where we didn't see it as that. And I'm probably to a fault similar sometimes, I guess, to a fault similar tomorrow, where it was like, okay, so what am I doing next?
Well, sure,
Because I think, like, that's what I kind of need, too. But I really think that, like, there's no doubt about it that the most enriching experience I've ever been a part of so far is American Utopia. And then I think there's part of me that's, like, the challenge to continue to do. I learned a lot there, and so I want to take that, and I want to bring it here, and I want to share that, you know, my new learned experiences with others as well in just different ways.
Like what kind of ways are you talking about?
Other creative projects where an endeavor can be. I did one interview with David, and one of the best things, it was also out of school, and one of the best things he said was like, you guys might come to this show and you might look at this and be like, how am I ever going to do that? Like, look at all this, like the production value, blah, blah, blah. He's like, but really, this is just 12 people on a stage right now, and you can make the most of like anything, of having the least amount. So don't let that, you know, interfere with like your imagination, absolutely, essentially, right? So yes, it's like, yeah, so for me too, it's like already in the next project I do, maybe it's, you know, probably not going to have a Broadway budget, but whatever budget it has to like attempt to make the most out of that, and for sure, and like bring that sort of creative imagination to those endeavors, and then just, you know, to kind of be, no, but we can do this. Yes. A lot of it is like, you know, working with somebody too, especially if production, and as an artist, sometimes it's like getting them to see something that they don't really see in themselves yet too.
Correct.
So
that's,
it's, you know, it's these, it's these, yeah, I mean, it's, it, without a doubt, this experience, I mean, I was like, you know, the younger side of the group. So when I'm like touring and with these legends that I've done it, it's like, it was constantly learning. It was learning how to travel. It was learning how to like, you know, play music like this. It was all these things. And so, yes, there's, you know, definite grieving, and I see it, and it's like, but I, you know, I love everyone. I think all that, none of that is like leaving necessarily like within me either.
I think that's part of grieving. It's accepting that the love you felt, the connection you felt, it's just transforming. You know, it's like, okay, grieving is related. I mean, it's a word used to when somebody dies, mm-hmm, a dear person that, you know. And I think there is a big process, which is like, first, it's like understanding that something happened and it's like something is finite, it's ending.
Yes.
And then what does that mean? It's like all those emotions of like losing someone or something so dear to you. And then part of the grieving also is accepting that actually, even though the person physically dies or this show physically ended, is still so alive in ourselves as, yes, as we are putting, you know, like, oh yeah, I make use of what I learned on this show into something else. And so I think grieving, even though it has like a strong negative connotation, has like a very positive connotation as well.
Yes.
You know, like, and I lost my mom in a horrible accident, and that was like the toughest thing of happened in my life. But it was amazing after, like, you know, like the emotion of losing someone so dear, and what remained of like the experience of having her as my mom. You know, what stayed with me was like, it's so rewarding. So the grieving became something else, you know, became like more of like a understanding, or it's not even accepting, you know, it's something, the lessons that she taught me, or, you know, it becomes something else. So I took as something positive. You know, like I tried to transform, you know, the death of someone dear into something like, it kind of like, all the lessons that she taught me were like very vivid and alive, and that's how I remember her. And I think it's the same thing, because this show, you know, like, okay, we did it and everything, but it's like, it's so alive within us, and you never die. It's there. Sorry about that.
No, it's... And actually, you didn't need to try to make the grief into something else, because it happened really because of how she was, and that's what lives now.
Exactly.
And that same when we talk about, you know, the essence of David, that's, you don't have to try to make it happen. It's there.
Yeah, it's there.
I don't really think about the show, you know, a lot. And then I realized the other day, someone was asking me about it, I was like, oh, I got excited, and I started telling, like, oh, and then this moment, and then we sing, and then we sing this harmony, and then all of a sudden I was like, I could almost start crying, like, as soon as I started singing the harmony. I was really like, oh, there's so much emotion connected, and it's so rich that, like, knowing myself too, I'm like, can't touch it too much. I mean, it's beautiful and does inform everything, but it's also like, which is also the beautiful thing, like you're saying about mourning, or about, I mean, I can still get that way if I think about my grandmother who's been gone for 20 years. Like, it's, she's right there, you know? which is beautiful. Oh, it's such a blessing.
More beautiful. And a blessing, yeah.
It's a blessing because, like, you know, oh, for my grandmother, for example, it's like she's visiting sometimes. Like, I can hear her sound. So I remember that with this show, I was telling somebody about this. Oh, yeah, then we turn around, and then I was like, oh.
That's then, lovely, though.
What's for lunch? You know, yeah. The subject.
Or call one of us through FaceTime.
Yeah. There's a lot to it. I think it's going to be years of unpacking it.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, wow, learning. You can learn lessons from things years later that happen and see how you behaved in a certain situation.
Totally, yes.
And go, oh, I can do that differently now. Or I would do that differently now.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's always learning even after it's done.
Yes.
And specifically learning from the show. I mean, you guys were saying, like, Stefan was saying too, I realized, like, man, my time, just a very technical thing, just got so much better.
Yeah.
From playing with people with great time every night. It's like learning about rhythm and about.
Yeah, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So yes. Lucky. One bass player, six drummers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the luckiest.
You're the luckiest for sure.
And it was so nice that we all became teachers of each other, you know, like,
yeah.
I it was so funny, like, unfortunately Gustavo is not here, but he's kind of like the most, like, he has such a level of communication, yet his English is like so broken.
Yes,
it's
it is.
Like,
it's so, a beautiful thing.
So I used to come on the theater and hear, like, him practice English with Jackie. And I was like,
he's super dedicated, you know, we'd have our lessons and we'd work on all that stuff. And
or you know, like, he's like, that guy is like he's like the Pelé of, like, percussion, because he's so skilled. And so I took as an opportunity to learn from him, you know, to be like, I want you to be my teacher. And I think we all had moments like that.
Yeah, surely.
You know, like,
surely.
On the technical music aspect of it, you know, I was get tips from Daniel. You know, Daniel has this incredible snare drum technique. I was like, oh, can you teach me that? Or, you know, like,
man, I am really thrilled, though. I think about it all the time when I'm playing, like, certain things. Tim, Stefan, all you guys showed me, like, oh man, you know, so many things.
But you're so lucky, all of you, to have such an incredible understanding of rhythm that you could not possibly have had, you know. All of you knowing how to get it in the pocket in a particular kind of way. No matter what the pocket is, you can do it. I just think you're so lucky.
But we were adjusting to each other all the time.
Absolutely.
Too.
No, it is the adjusting and the ability so to do rather than locking yourself in your own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That's we talked about pockets before.
Yeah.
Are they real or are they not? Thanks so much for coming on board for this conversation. There are many more I can't wait to share with you. So do click the subscribe button. And if you want to come and find me on Instagram or Patreon. And I definitely hope to see you here really soon. Thanks so much.